It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Dean Kallenbach in for Kate Archer Kent. Good morning. Platform, thought leader, ghosting. Those words made this year's list of banished words. Here's a taste of when you might have heard these words this year from news to pop culture.
Well, it's really the continued success of our platform business model. As a platform, developers can use
tremendous benefit to our country. Now it's a worldwide platform, and
our goal is to be a platform for all ideas.
Well, I think the bigger impact for Paul Ryan is he's been a thought leader for a long time.
I still like you the most. You'll always be my favorite ghost.
So nice, and I didn't know how to break it to him. So I didn't ghost right away. I slide it out very slowly. But now I feel bad because guess what happened after that? I got ghosted.
We're talking with two guests, or thought leaders, if you will, on ghosting, a number of words this year because of overuse and misuse today. And we want to hear from you. What word or phrase are you sick of? What would you banish? What words or phrase do you think are misused, overused? And what would you say is a generally useless word or phrase? 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org is a way to reach us via email or tweet us on, I was just wondering if tweet is one of the words, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Here with us to explore the 44th annual Banished Word List are Rodney Handley and John Shibley. Rodney Handley is president of Lake Superior State University, which is based in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. Rodney, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Dean. It's a pleasure to be with you.
And John Shibley is a photographer and staff writer at Lake Superior State University and co-compiler of the Banished Words List. John, welcome back to the morning show.
Hey, happy New Year.
Hey, John, let's start with you. How did the Banished Words List get its start?
It was at a New Year's Eve party, 1975. A group of faculty and staff were getting around over some martinis and discussing what words and phrases they'd heard of the previous year, 1975, that got on their nerves. And I think three predecessors before me, Bill Raby, ran the College Relations Office. He also was a contributing writer to United Press International. And he made a bet to them right there that if he came up with this group of five phrases and words that they talked about that evening, and if he went home that night and typed it up on his Olivetti typewriter and released it to UPI, that they'd pick it up. And they did.
Yeah.
They did. And that's how it got started, January 1st, 1976.
Most great ideas, I think, are developed during New Year's Eve parties. Overall, how many words have been banished through the years, John?
We're closing in on 1,000.
Wow.
And you could write a book with these words. And, you know, we're not telling you people to get rid of them completely. We're just asking folks to back up and think about how they express themselves in the English language.
So, Rodney Handley, you're in your first year as president of Lake Superior State University. Had you heard of the list before joining the school?
I had. I worked in the Upper Midwest at a number of different schools, and I remember hearing about the Banished Word List by listening to NPR.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's I'm actually quite familiar with the list, and it was really my first entry into Lake Superior State University.
Now, you had a hand in pulling the list together this year. What was that like, or maybe I should ask it, how did you wrap your head around it?
Well, it's I worked very closely with our crack team of wordsmiths, and worked very closely with John on the list, and so we tweaked it a little bit. He showed me an early draft. Some new entries came in there near the deadline, and there were a number of high quality entries that came in this year that we wanted to take a close look at, and which we did. So.
I want to note that wrap my head around something is a word up for banishment on the 44th annual list. What did nominators say about that particular phrase?
Well, the wrap my head around is, let me see, first of all, Linda from Bloomington, Minnesota wrote, "It's impossible to do and it makes no sense" as a phrase. And we thought about that, and we've all used that phrase, of course,
sure.
But you know, Linda had a good point, and so we put it on the list this year.
So, John Shibley, what qualifies a word or phrase for inclusion on the Banished Word List? How do words or phrases like wrap my head around come up? It's through these nomination processes.
Correct. It's an unpopularity contest. Whatever gets on nerves, we encourage them to nominate a word or phrase through our online form and for the last couple of years, our Facebook page. So whatever floats to the top, whatever gets the most votes, sort of steers the list. And then we try to encourage people to have a clever reason for banning a word or phrase because it is in humor. It's meant to have fun at the end of the year, one way to ring in a new year.
We're talking with John Shibley and Rodney Handley of Lake Superior State University about the 44th Annual Banished Words List. This list is from LSSU. It's in its fifth decade and lists words for banishment because of overuse, misuse, and general uselessness. Are you sick of hearing the word collusion? Is the word litigate overused? Does the term legally drunk frustrate you? I want to hear your thoughts about these words at 800-642-1234. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings or email ideas at WPR.org. Rodney, let's turn to the list. One word in the family of acronyms that end in is the family of acronyms that end in OTIS. And I don't like acronyms that get turned into words anyway. This one goes a little far. OTIS like POTUS or FLOTUS or SCOTUS. Those are short for President of the United States, First Lady of the United States, Supreme Court of the United States. What's the rationale behind this suggestion for banishment?
Well, when that made it on, was nominated, it was David from Kinross, Michigan that sent that in. And it's, as you noted, it's an overuse of President, Supreme Court, and First Lady. When I saw that on the list, I was immediately drawn to that. Yeah. I mean, we're not all secret agent men and women out there, and we don't need to talk like that. And I think it's pretty much disrespectful to the positions, to those areas. Just call them by their names, President of the United States, First Lady of the United States, Supreme Court of the United States. And I think more people will understand what you're talking about if you do that.
Now, it's safe to say the so-called banished words are in your wheelhouse, John, given your involvement over time on the list. And wheelhouse itself is one that made the list this year. Why do away with a word used to describe an area of expertise?
Well, as my grandfather used to say, never use a $20 word on a nickel errand. And if you have an area of expertise or if you're confident with something, I suppose metaphors are always useful. But the main thing is try to add to your bag of metaphors to try to keep yourself and everybody who listens to you engaged. And if they hear a word too much, all of a sudden it just becomes a reflex rather than carrying any kind of cachet. So run to your thesaurus and try to find synonyms to leader or area of competence and educate people and educate yourself as you use the English language.
Rodney, we hear the word platform in connection with technology, and now it's up for so-called banishment. What did the nominator have to say about why this word should be done away with?
Well, it was Michael from Alameda, California, that said that people use it as an excuse to rant. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter have all become platforms. Even athletes call their post-game interview a platform. Michael added, please step down from the platform already and just talk to us like normal people. And I couldn't agree more. I think that was a clever nomination. And I would like to use this platform to get rid of the word platform.
Very good. We continue our conversation about the 44th Annual Banished Words List from Lake Superior State University. Our guests are the president of the university, Rodney Handley, and staff writer John Shibley. They stay with us. What word or phrase are you sick of, and what would you banish? Do you agree with the list decision to include collusion, ghosting, and platform? Why or why not? What words or phrase do you think are misused or overused? What would you say is a generally useless word or phrase? Give us a call at 800-642-1234 with your submission. I'm Dean Kallenbach, in for Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Dean Kallenbach. Kate Archer-Kent is off today. Coming up after news at the bottom of the hour, we'll talk about New Year's resolutions relating to personal finances. For now, though, we're exploring Lake Superior State University's 44th Annual Banished Words List, which weighs words based on overuse, misuse, and uselessness. Some of the words this year included ghosting, collusion, litigate, yeet, and even the phrase the most important election of our time. Here's a sample of where you heard those words this year thanks to news and pop culture.
So why'd you have to ghost? Why'd you have to ghost?
And I say it all the time. There was no collusion. No collusion.
No collusion.
No collusion.
I believe this fight is nothing more and nothing less than an attempt by our Democratic colleagues to relitigate the 2016 presidential election.
This November's elections are more important than any I can remember in my lifetime, and that includes when I was on the ballot. That's saying something. Politicians say every time, oh, this is the most important election. This one's really that important.
What word or phrase are you sick of, and what would you banish? What words or phrases do you think are misused and overused? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, with your submission. Email ideas at WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Our guests stay with us. John Shibley is a photographer and staff writer at Lake Superior State University and co-compiler of the Banished Words List. Rodney Handley is president of Lake Superior State University. And John and Rodney, we have a call from David in Dubuque, Iowa. David, welcome to the morning show.
Yeah, good morning. My beef, I guess, is I constantly hear in the media and otherwise the phrase, I am mad. Meaning, I am angry, but if you are mad, it could be that you're saying you're insane also.
It could indeed. John, has mad made the list in the past?
Oh, I don't see mad on there, and I don't see I am mad, but I am angry does speak more succinctly to your emotional mood.
So you've got you've got your first nomination for the 2020 list.
Yes, we do. Vote early and vote often.
Thank you, David. John, back to you. While the word litigate, which made this year's list, may be completely normal in the legal world, the nominator who suggested it be banned seems to think it's been misappropriated. Explain that.
Well, politicians and journalists just love to come in on a word that sort of resonates with their the consumers of information.
Not journalists.
And yeah, not true at all. No, as a communicator, it's easy to reinforce an idea by sort of taking it from where someplace else that you've heard it. And after a while, that's valid. But I love online thesauruses. And if you can express and focus precisely what you mean, like your caller said, I am mad, go with angry. And if you think litigate's not the appropriate term, hunt for something a little more precise that'll get across what you're trying to say.
Rodney, as long as we're on words involving politicians, let's turn to the phrase suggested by Jose in Ozark, Arkansas, the most important election of our time. What struck him about that as a phrase to banish?
Well, I think as you played in your lead-in, it seems like every election now is the most important election of our time. It just seems like it's an election. All elections are important because we're choosing our leaders. And frankly, get out and vote is so using the phrase most important election of our time just seems redundant. It seems unnecessary, and it just seems, I don't know, it just seems like it's too fluffy or something. So it easily made its way onto the list this year.
To me, the most interesting word on the list is the word yeet. I had never heard the word yeet before getting ready for this show, and yet my team of producers is well steeped in the word and thinks it's a very important word to keep. Would you define that for us before we dive in why the nominator wants to get rid of it? John, maybe if you could join that.
Oh, okay, sure, yeah. Well, the nominator from Sault Ste. Marie, of all places, if I hear one more freshman say yeet, I might just yeet myself out a window. It's a Generation Z word, and a lot of our students, I hadn't heard about it myself until the first week of December, and I was educated, and all my students said, you got to get rid of this. And then I checked the nominations rolling in, and it came from all over North America.
Wow.
So I'm guessing social media probably echoed that one into obsolescence, if you can use that expression at all.
I know I'm getting old when a word can make the banished word list that I haven't heard of yet. So its overuse hasn't reached me. I'm talking with President Rodney Handley and John Shibley about Lake Superior State University's 44th annual banished word list. Words considered for banishment because of misuse, overuse, and general uselessness. Rodney, let's consider the next one, thought leader. We've heard it a couple times already in the show. What kind of feedback did this get from the nominators, and why do away with this one?
Well, it was Matt from Superior, Colorado, that said that thoughts aren't ranked or scored. How can someone hold a thought lead, much even a lead by thoughts? And Paul from Ann Arbor, Michigan, said, well, if you have to follow a thought leader, then you're not much of a thinker. When we think about thought leader, we all kind of know what that means. But it's kind of a slang phrase that's overused. So when it was nominated, we looked at the rationale behind the nomination. We agreed that this year thought leader needs to be put into the list.
Legally Drunk made the list. John, why?
Well, if you're legally drunk, you're probably sitting at home in a nice, comfortable chair reading a book. if where it becomes a problem is if you're illegally drunk and you get pulled over for driving while drunk. That's the threshold that makes you illegally drunk. So it's a similar fine point to when your caller said, I'm angry, not mad. Well, you're always legally drunk until you're designated as otherwise by an officer of the law.
Yeah, I think that kind of stems from exceeding the legal limit, and you just tie it into the drunk. That kind of makes sense to see how that fell into use, but we appreciate the fact that it's now been banished, so we can not worry about that one anymore. Rodney, let's look at grapple. What caused this to qualify for the banishment list?
Well, grapple is an interesting word. It was David from Traverse City, Michigan, that pointed out that people who struggle with ideas and issues now grapple with them. He said, I prefer to grapple with a wrestler or an overgrown tree. Well, grapple is, he has a point, and so it was easily, again, made it onto the list this year.
Well, as we get closer to wrapping up here, let's consider the phrase in the books. What faux pas has been committed when it comes to this phrase?
Just overuse. Wrapping it up, is it in the books? Is it ever in the books? It seems like everyone's holiday party is in the books this year. It's all there for friends to see on social media, along with photos of the happy party attendees. That came from Sandy of White Lake Township, Michigan. It just extends everywhere. So let's keep in the books in the library or in the good books section of your home.
Rodney and John, as you look at this year's list, any of the submissions surprise you?
I'll let you go with that, President Handley.
Well, I was like you, Dean. I was the word ye caught me off guard. It wasn't until John came to my office, and I looked at an early list of our nominations and what we were looking at, and the word ye was on there. And I'm like, John, what's going on here with this word? I've never heard it before, and I don't think I'm myself is that old, but he pointed out how the word is being used by students these days, and sure enough, as I was walking down the sidewalk, there were a couple of our younger students here at the university that I heard use that word, and I'm like, oh my gosh, there might be a point to this. So it made its way onto the list.
We won't get to all of them, but I want to sneak in one or two more in. John, let's turn to the adjective crusty. How is that being used, and what makes it worth banishing?
Oh, everything's crusty. If it rubs you wrong, it's crusty. It's become, our Hannah from Campbellsville, Kentucky says, this has become a popular insult. It's disgusting and sounds weird. Make the madness stop. Well, I used to get crusty pies, crusty donuts. Maybe at times I was crusty. I guess my white beard helps me along with that. But it is thrown around quite a bit, and that received, oh gosh, over 800 votes. So that sort of floated to the top this year.
One I used yesterday on the air was optics. That's a word that's on the banishment list. Rodney, what did the nominators say about that?
Well, it was Bob in Tempe, Arizona, that just simply pointed out it's optics is just simply a trendy way to say appearance. And I must admit that 10 years ago, I had never heard the word optics used in referring to appearance, but it's made its way into our vernacular, You hear it all the time. You can't even watch a news broadcast these days and not hear the word optics in reference to appearance. We think that appearance is, frankly, a better word. So it made its way onto the list.
John, in 20 seconds, how can people submit nominations for next year's list?
They can go to our submission form. Just do a web search on LSSU Banish. It'll take you right to the landing page. Read about the history, see all the words that have been banished. But most importantly, start voting for the 2020 list. And you can do that through a form. We have no limits on the number of votes. Vote early and vote often. So search on LSSU word banish, and you can get started.
John Shibley and Rodney Handley from Lake Superior State University, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Dean.
And if you want to see the complete list of 15, you can go to WPR.org and go to the morning show page. We'll have them up there for you, and you can decide for yourself whether you think they belong. Coming up next, we figure out how to improve our financial well-being in the new year. I'm Dean Kallenbach, in for Kate Archer Kent. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Dean Kallenbach, in for Kate Archer Kent. Getting in shape is a pretty common New Year's resolution. But for some, it's not physical fitness, but fiscal fitness we crave. When it comes to our personal finances, balance sheets that don't balance can be stressful. Our guests will help us with ideas to meet those resolutions for 2019 and beyond. Have you made a financial New Year's resolution for 2019? If so, share it with us. What is it? And do you hope to save more in 2019 or maybe spend less? And how will you achieve those and other financial goals? 800-642-1234 to join us. You can email ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Peggy Olive is our guest. She's a financial capability specialist who holds a joint appointment with the School of Human Ecology's Center for Financial Security at UW-Madison and the UW Extension Cooperative Extension. Peggy, welcome back to the show.
Why, thanks for having me. And can I just say that I appreciate the platform to wrap my head around a subject that's really in my wheelhouse. There you have it.
Thank you for listening. Spending less and saving more are fairly common New Year's resolutions. Paying off debt may also make the list. What do you think, or what do you make of some people's efforts to get their finances on the right track in the new year?
Yeah, I applaud the efforts, I applaud the sentiment, the paying attention to finances, and the top of the year is a great fresh start, as is the beginning of a month, because you can kind of start to get into the flow of your spending. I think that the one beef I really have with some of the financial New Year's resolutions that we make is that, like many other resolutions, they just really peter out. So we focus on a goal at the beginning of the year of, like, what you really should be doing with your money. And you know, lots of times it's driven on guilt or somebody else is kind of imposing the idea. But I like to focus on what your money could be doing for you. I mean, think of it as a little bit more of an opportunity than something that's really going to drag you down and take all the fun out of your life.
Yeah, I do wonder if Christmas spending maybe has some influence there, or maybe I didn't get a big enough gift and I actually have to plan my finances now. I'm not sure. There seems to be a general consensus, though, among financial specialists that a goal for people should be financial well-being. It's a phrase that is not common, but seems like something that makes some sense. First, what does financial well-being mean?
Sure. It's a phrase that's been around a few years, and it's based on some research where the Bureau of Consumer Financial Protection and some other researchers, including at UW-Madison, interviewed people all around the country of different ages, and they talked to housing counselors and financial counselors and looked at some of the research, and they came up with four common factors that people who said they had a higher sense of financial well-being had in common. So the factors are having a handle on that day-to-day spending, so you just kind of know what's coming in and going out every day, having some kind of plan for emergencies, making progress towards your financial goals, so that means you know what your goals are and you have a plan to start to move closer to them, and then also that just in that day-to-day that people have some financial freedom. So, you know, everybody has those things that are important to them, those personal priorities, and so you have a little bit of wiggle room in your budget to have a little bit of fun with your spending too. So it's finding the right balance for you individually with those different categories.
Yeah, not everybody's financial well-being would look the same, I assume.
Yeah, it might touch on all those different categories, but you're going to have different financial priorities, different goals. Planning for emergencies for some people, you know, if you have money in the bank, that's terrific for, and that's certainly a goal to aim for, but for other people, right now it might be an open line of credit on a credit card. It might be a person that they could turn to. But having that conversation ahead of time so that person knows that you're kind of the emergency backup. So it's just paying attention to those different areas of our financial lives.
Those steps all seem to make some sense, but is there something available where if I want to find out what my financial well-being is, is there something that I can use to help me figure out the answers to all those questions?
Oh, of course. There's an online quiz for everything these days. So I can certainly share the Bureau for Consumer Financial Protection has a financial well-being quiz that you can take online. It's just a handful of questions, and it asks things about, you know, how you could handle a big unexpected expense, or you know, if you had a party or an event to go to, how much would that stress you out? And then you can compare your score to the general population, you know, which is kind of fun to see where you rank. But like I say, the most important thing is how you want to focus on that for yourself individually, what that score means for you.
And we'll make sure to put that quiz on the morning show page of the Wisconsin Public Radio website, WPR.org. You'll find a link there that you could find that quiz. Peggy Olive is our guest. She's financial capability specialist who holds a joint appointment with UW-Madison and UW Extension, Cooperative Extension. What do you think is the state of your financial life? Do you have a budget in place for day-to-day expenses? 800-642-1234 or ideas at WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. If we're trying to achieve better financial well-being, how to get started? What are the first steps to take toward gaining control, for instance, over kind of step one there, the day-to-day expenses?
Sure. You know, I would say to look at your big picture. You know, think about that with the terms of financial well-being. Do you know what's coming in and going out day to day? Do you have some kind of plan for emergencies? Have you set financial goals? So think about that big picture and then start to focus on those small steps. So looking back 1 year from now, you know, what would bring you a little bit closer to that ideal financial situation? And we know about half the people even ever set some kind of goal, even try to achieve something or reach something. But unfortunately, then less than half ever actually reach that goal. And the number one reason that's cited in the research is that when people hit an obstacle or something happens they're not expecting, maybe one of those big unexpected expenses, then they throw the whole plan out the window. So I think, you know, knowing that your financial life, like any goal, is going to move forward in fits and starts. So kind of having a general idea of what you want to work on, and then definitely planning that, you know, things are going to get in the way and you might have to hit the pause button on your goals moving forward, whether it's, you know, tracking spending or saving for emergencies or paying down debt, and then as soon as you can, get back on track.
How much is good to have in the bank for an emergency?
Again, that is so personal. Some of the benchmarks to look for are, you know, looking at your average monthly expenses. So take a look at, you know, how you would, if your income stopped, if something happened, how would you pay those living expenses, your rent or mortgage, the car payment, the utilities, the groceries, and add up that amount and start with that. I mean, that could be a first goal to come up with 1 month of living expenses, so if something happened, you'd have that cushion. You know, and I say that, but I also know it can take months and months and months to save up that amount. So what's the backup plan meanwhile? You know, have the line of credit, have a person. So everyone needs just some kind of plan as they're working towards that savings or that kind of emergency fund.
Yeah, these are tough times for some folks. I'm sure someone listening to us is thinking that themselves. How can I make good financial decisions when the money is tight?
Yeah, and so that's why I like to think about it with the financial well-being, because you still have control over that day-to-day spending, knowing what's coming in, what's going out. You know, it might not be as much as you need or as what you'd like. You can still pay attention to it, and you can still develop that plan for emergencies, having conversations for people, and you can still think about and plan for your financial goals. You might not be putting money in the bank, but you could certainly be doing research and getting information about those goals. You know, whether it's a way-off retirement or whether it's a new car in the next year. So you could certainly be doing some of that legwork, even if you don't have the money to put towards it.
I've worked with my adult children a bit on trying to budget, and the big question is, how do you determine what categories need to be included in your budget and then how much goes into them? What's a good way to break that out?
I think the best way is to work backwards. So we're just a few days into January, so anyone that can hear the sound of my voice right now, I would throw down the gauntlet, because I don't think that's been banned yet. And I would challenge people to start tracking their spending. Just, you know, write down everything that you buy, and you can start to see patterns. So when you get to the end of January, you'll start seeing, oh, okay, well, I had food, but, you know, this was groceries, this was eating out, maybe this was snacks from the vending machine at work, or stopping and getting stuff at the gas station when I fill up. So you can start seeing your own patterns and your own behaviors. And, you know, no judgment when you're adding up those numbers. Just step back and look at your spending and the categories and say, you know, ask yourself if you're happy with that. Is that where you want your money to be going? Is that what brings you, it's your money, so is that, well, and with the case of your kids, Dean, it really might be your money. So it's your money, so, you know, are you spending it where, what brings you the most fulfillment?
How can you segment out? Well, I tell you what, let's get to that later. I do want to point out regarding that, you know, taking stock of what you spend every day. The other thing that's nice about that is that you do get, it does make you a little more conscious about what you're spending. We'll get to that in a bit. Financial capability specialist from UW-Madison and UW Extension, Peggy Olive, is joining us. Are money matters on your list for New Year's resolutions? Have you had success in setting fiscal goals for your personal finances? Maybe some tips you can share with us. 800-642-1234. ideas@WPR.org. Or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. I'm Dean Kallenbeck. Kate Archer Kent's off today. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Dean Kallenbeck, in for Kate Archer Kent. We're talking about using the new year as a good trigger for fixing your finances. What's your financial resolution? And what are you doing to ensure financial well-being? 800-642-1234 is our number. Tweet us at WPR Mornings or email ideas@WPR.org. UW-Madison Financial Stability Specialist Peggy Olive is with us to answer those questions and mine. Peggy Olive, how about segmenting out your money? In other words, is it enough to have your money in a savings account and a checking account and a retirement account, or is there a better way to label your money so you know what money is for what?
We do know from behavioral economics that it does help people if they have a label or a category on their money. So before the break, we were talking about emergency funds. So if you set aside money. Maybe you're saving it in a jar to start and then opening up a savings account, and that's labeled your emergency fund. That helps put some intention on that as opposed to the new car fund or the longer-term retirement fund. So it does help to be intentional to think about what that money's for. And then I think one of the challenges is, for example, with emergency funds, if people have an urgent situation or an unexpected expense and they have to tap into those funds, it doesn't feel good to take that money out because you've worked so hard to put it in. But that's what it's there for. So for some people, their emergency fund, it could be called, you know, a put-and-take fund. It could be, you know, put the money in as much as you can and then take it out when you really need it, when you can't cover expenses out of your current paycheck. So it does help to have the categories and even to have some different checking or savings, because if the money is out of your checking account, you're less likely to spend it or get that money out in cash at the ATM.
Yeah. And I've already aged myself this program, so I'll do it again. I remember, you know, as a teenager when we had passbook savings accounts that paid 5.5%, and that was easy, you know, easy access money, and now you can't get anything, you know, that guarantees that sort of result. It feels problematic to me to build up a lot of savings in an account that's not earning you much interest. Are you better off putting it in something like a long-term CD or a money market or something like that, but then the access is less?
Yes, absolutely. So it really depends on your goal when you need that money. And granted, it is pretty discouraging when you have a little savings account and maybe you're getting a quarter of 1%. And we might see some of those savings rates going up as the different interest rates are going up. Right. So we might see some of that giving back to us as a consumer. But, you know, if it is a longer-term goal, maybe you need a new car, but it's still a few years out, you could look at a CD. And then typically you can get a higher return on your money. So thinking about when you need the money, how quickly you'd need to access that money, and we call it kind of laddering that savings, so having different pots of savings, that some that is liquid, you can access it right away in a savings account or a money market account or a share draft account or a CD. And then even those longer-term savings, maybe it's the retirement account or a children's savings account that you won't be using for 5, 10, 20 years even.
Another piece of financial well-being involves having the financial ability to absorb a shock. What does that mean, and how do you know you have enough?
That's some of those unexpected expenses that I had mentioned, and having some plan for emergencies. If you had an illness or an accident, you know, you might have lost wages at work, and then the double whammy is you might have some additional expenses or medical bills, or if it was a car accident, have to replace a car. So you have less money coming in and more bills also coming in. So that's kind of what we mean when we say a financial shock. So having that plan, whether it's the money in the bank or a line of credit or a backup support person can really help people absorb those shocks, because we know, you know, life is full of those unexpected expenses. Some are, you know, good things like an invitation on a trip or a concert, and many others are, you know, not so good.
Is that just a matter of having a savings account then?
Yes. I mean, if you can have enough to put in a savings account, and you can shop around a little bit, because different banks and credit unions require different minimums to open a savings account, anywhere from $5 at some credit unions to $100 or $300. So to get that amount and start putting it in a savings account. And then, you know, it's always a matter of self-control. So can you make it automatic? Can you have the money automatically deducted from your paycheck? So come up with an amount that feels right for you. Maybe it's $10 or $20 from each paycheck is a place to start, seeing if you miss that. If you can get by without that money, maybe you can make it a little bit more. And once you make it automatic, you really don't have to go back and worry about not spending that money in your checking account. So that's one way we can kind of build in a little bit more self-control around some of those goals.
Peggy Olive is Financial Capability Specialist with UW-Madison and UW Extension Cooperative Extension. Peggy, another facet of financial well-being is being on track to meet financial goals. And I assume these mean like some long-term goals. What can that look like?
Sure. And as I mentioned, if you have the money to put towards goals, that's great. And if not, you can certainly start doing some research. So making progress towards financial goals could be anything like saving up that, starting with a 1 month of an emergency fund and then maybe working up to 3 months over the years so you could cover those expenses and extra bills if something happens. And then also thinking a longer term down the road. You mentioned retirement. You might have a child heading off to college in 5 or 10 years. So children's savings accounts are special longer term savings accounts for to pay for higher education expenses, you know, for yourself or a child. So even doing that research to figure out where's the best place to put that money. And then, it all goes back to tracking the spending to figure out where you're spending your money, if that's where you want to be spending it, or if you'd rather be taking some of that money and matching it to your goals and putting it towards your future.
Are there some apps that you can use to help you track your progress on this sort of thing, and preferably free or cheap ones?
Oh, sure. I'm all about free or cheap. So start with your financial institution. Mm. Many of them have great online apps. If you do any online banking, many of them track the spending. They put in different categories. You get different pie charts and things that could be very motivating to look where your spending is going. And then there's, I would just say to get on and search for different apps. There's some popular ones. I mean, Mint is one of the most popular spending ones where you can attach that to your own financial accounts. So there's many there. There's some that can send you a text message if you're going over a limit for the month. So it all depends on what you want that app to do for you. Do you want it to spend less? Do you want to be more conscious of your spending? Do you just want to track where your money's going? And there's definitely many free ones to choose from that provide a great basic service. And if you like it, I'm sure they'd be happy to sell you the upgraded version.
As we get ready to close our conversation, how does debt come into play here, and at what point is debt a part of our overall financial picture, especially when we consider the state of our financial well-being?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, there's some debt that we can expect. You know, maybe it's the car or the home, or maybe it's a larger bill of sending someone to college. And then there's other debt we know is very stressful for people, and it can actually lead people to feel more depressed about their situation. And that's kind of that shorter-term consumer debt. That's when people take on debt for those expenses that, you know, maybe it was an accident or an illness or something that happened.
And having to find a way to pay off those credit cards, probably by borrowing elsewhere. Peggy, we're out of time. I do thank you for joining us this morning.
Well, I appreciate you having me, and now you can put this one in the books.
Thank you, Peggy Olive. Peggy Olive, a financial capability specialist who holds a joint appointment with the School of Human Ecology Center for Financial Security at UW-Madison and the UW Extension Cooperative Extension. I'm Dean Collin, back in for Kate Archer Kent. It's The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.